Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host and managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. As we continue to engage government executives who are changing the way government does business, we are here on location in New York City. Today, local and state governments are under tremendous pressure to do more with less. Addressing the challenges arising from this new reality presents opportunities to try different approaches, borrow new strategies, forego old ways of doing things, and pave the way for reshaping the business of government. How is New York City government modernizing and consolidating operations for the 21st century? What is New York City doing to shape a government that is customer-focused, innovative, and more efficient? We will explore these questions and so much more with our very special guest, Stephen Goldsmith, Deputy Mayor for Operations for the City of New York. Let's start off by learning more about your role and mission as the city's Deputy Mayor for Operations. What are your official responsibilities, and could you highlight the portfolios of agencies that are under your purview?
Well, the mayor has set up a organization that is designed to bring out the best and most innovative policies of the folks who work for him. So the commissioners are all really strong people in their own right and creative and good managers. And so I have a couple roles. One is kind of coordinate this portfolio, police and fire and buildings and taxi and limousine and some aspects of environmental, water and waste and the like. And then I touch a little bit up against transportation. So, you know, most of the, you know, general operating areas, one that's particularly kind of horizontally important across those agencies, there's two. One is our central administrative structure called DCAS, which is kind of HR and buildings and, you know, maintenance and the like, and civil service and testing and training. And another, which is our Department of Information and Technology, and it's central to many of the reform efforts. So then in addition to that bucket of activities, then what we're trying to do is set up processes to change and reform kind of the structures of government. I mean, the mayor's assignment has been, you know, we have a system that works well, but we have a cost base that's unsupportable. Mm-hmm. Right? So how do we reform? So there's a reform agenda, and then there's an operating agenda, and I look at how the two of those come together.
So what's a day or a week in the life of the Deputy Mayor for Operations of this city?
Well, I have a personality defect which drives me to work all the time, right? So I don't really want to confess my work day. But I work 15, 16, 17 hours a day, and there's generally 15, 30-minute meetings, a handful of crises, a longer meeting, a speech, and the day then tends to get a little less cluttered. Then you clear out the day's emails and go back at it. So really the process is that because these managers, these commissioners are experienced, that the day-to-day operation of New York City government is very professional and very dependable. If there is an issue that cuts across the government agencies where we have to be collaborative, if there's a substantial revenue or fiscal issue, which would now appear to be the case on like almost a minute-by-minute basis, and you know, how do you maintain services while contracting dollars? I mean, that will raise itself up. If there's a cross-cutting technology, innovation, public-private partnership. Mm-hmm. So basically, the day is a mixture of crises driven often by financial but not exclusively issues, and a mixture of these kind of innovative technology reform agendas that we have, civil service and procurement and mm-hmm. technology and digitization and analytics and performance, and those are kind of the larger parts of the reform agenda.
So you've mentioned reform agenda. You've mentioned the operational aspects of your portfolio. Could you give us a sense of the scale of operation? What's the size of the city's budget? What's the status, the state of the budget? And how has the economy impacted your flexibility with regard to the budget?
Well, it's often easier to do creative things when you have a lot of money. Now, when you don't have much money, there's an imperative for change, but it takes some capital investment to produce really transformative change. It doesn't take any capital investment to produce incremental change. You know, how do you turn off the lights in the building? And how do you order and procure better? And how do you copy on two sides of a page? And, you know, how, I mean, there's a lot of that stuff that actually at our scale mounts up to, you know, money, you know, a teacher, the equivalent of a salary of a teacher here or a police officer there. So those issues are out there. But the larger issues are ones that really are based on the fact we've got a $63-65 billion, depending on what year you're talking about, dollar budget. So let's call it $65 billion. And that includes education and a fair chunk of health care. But the problem is that that budget doesn't really cover – the revenues don't cover the costs. And the mayor has managed to reduce operating expenses a few times. But the problem is aggravated by, as it is everywhere in the country, but particularly here, these huge overhanging retiree costs, pension and health care. And every year, more and more money goes out of the current operating budget to fill the hole in financing the pensions. And so, you know, when the mayor first started, this number was about $1.2 billion a year. Next year, it'll be $8 billion, and then it goes up from there. So just to kind of pause and think about the scale of this, that's $8 billion in police officers and teachers and sanitation workers and social services and the like that we can't not afford because they have to pay for services that were previously given to the city of New York by its workforce. Right now, you know, there's a lot of argument about reforming the pensions and the like, and we really have to do it. But those are bargains that those employees made, right? They made a bargain with the, you know, existing administration at the time, and we owe an obligation to pay that bargain. But that doesn't make it affordable, and there's a really serious crunch, and today's budget is out of balance by a couple billion dollars.
So I wanted to actually – I think you've probably alluded to it just now, but what are the top three challenges that you have faced since taking your current position, and how have you sought to ameliorate or address these challenges?
Well, it depends whether one's talking about kind of short-term or long-term. I mean, one really big challenge, I think, is to rework the labor management bargain in New York. And by that I mean – and the mayor had an editorial recently about this. I do not think the problem is the unions or are the unions, I guess you could say. I think the problem is how – the current civil service system developed in 100 years since Tammany Hall intersects with collective bargaining because the whole apparatus of collective bargaining and civil service in the city and state of New York is really designed to make sure that workers cannot exercise any discretion, right? It manages the workers as if they're a problem, not as if they're an asset. But the whole apparatus, union and management, is designed to make sure nothing ever changes in that formula. So the biggest challenge I think that I have is to try to provide the technology tools and the changes in the relationships that unlock the value of labor. And that means giving labor confidence that those changes are in their best interest. So right now they're suspicious. Mm-hmm. Management's suspicious because it doesn't want to give up. I'm not talking about the mayor when I say management, but, you know, middle management is suspicious because it doesn't want to give up its authority either. And then – so we have 200 collective bargaining agreements, and then those sit inside 2,000 civil service titles and competitive exams. And those are then surrounded by a morass of lawsuits and consent orders that no longer make any sense. And so then the challenge is how one gets innovation sanely through that maze.
You've had a very interesting and impressive career. You've been an elected mayor, an academic, a presidential advisor, and a practitioner. Could you tell us a little bit more about your career path and what brought you to your current role?
Well, I've been in public service for 3 decades or so. I grew up in Indianapolis and wanted to go into public service. I'm not sure why, but I did. And I went to law school hoping that I could use my education as a way to get into public service. And then I practiced law with a typical large corporate law firm, which was fine, but wasn't public service. It was service to some members of the public, right? And then I ran in a kind of desperate attempt to break into public service. I ran for district attorney, accidentally won. The other guy should have won, really should have won. And I served there for a while, waiting my turn to run for mayor until the mayor of my own party, who was mayor of Indianapolis, retired. Indianapolis had been fortunate to have a foundation of pretty good mayors, very good mayors, actually. And so then I served two terms as mayor, and at the last moment, essentially, I decided I would not run for a third term, and served as advisor to then-Governor Bush in the 2000 campaign, chief domestic policy advisor. And then when he was elected after the transition was over with, I went up to Harvard to be a professor of government and run the Innovations in American Government program.
With your expansive experience and a very impressive career, in your mind, what are the characteristics of an effective leader?
Well, I've been fortunate to have a lot of opportunities that have been, to me, meaningful and hopefully to others, including not just the things I mentioned, but also I've led the national service movement for Presidents Bush and Obama, Corporation Ask Me Service, Parent of AmeriCorps, and Vista. So I've seen lots of service. So let me answer the question this way. There's a tendency to answer as if you have to be high profile in order to be a leader, right? But, leader is not positional. You don't have to be at the top to lead, and many people at the top don't lead. If you're a leader and you're at the top, you can leverage changes in a greater scale, right? But one can lead inside an agency, inside a nonprofit, and you lead by a vision that is clear about the definition of the value you're trying to produce, right? You're not trying to produce an activity. You're not trying to protect an institution. You are trying to stop child abuse or reduce domestic violence or get people their child support or make their parks better or help them read better or help them graduate from school, right? So you know the value, right? You know the value. And the value is not an activity. It's not institutional. It's a value. And that's in your mind. And that's what you're passionate about, right? And then you're able to see in a broader way that if you use your passion and your articulation about the mission, that you can cause changes in an existing institution, right? So you can, either by example or by authority, you can move resources in order to drive that result. And so those people are leaders, right? They're leaders by the adopting good policies or leaders by the way they operationalize those policies. Now, I used to teach a couple cases in the Kennedy School, one about the relatively famous Boston Gun Project many years ago. In one of those situations, one of the breakthrough solutions was the probation department and the police department started making midnight calls in the homes of registered probationers, trying to make sure that the young probationers were home, right? That one reform drove down homicide rates in Boston. And it wasn't the idea of the mayor. It wasn't the idea of the police chief. It was the idea of the frontline supervisor in the probation department who's saying, look, the work we're doing is just not accomplishing what we think we want to accomplish, right? So I think the leadership skills can be anywhere. Now, the leaders that you see, whether they're a Mike Bloomberg caliber or otherwise at the high elected official office, I think, and one of the reasons attracted me to Mike Bloomberg is, look, I'm here to make a change in this. I'm using his words, not mine. I'm here to make a change in the permanent, perhaps, and institutional and structural and the way New York City operates and make the quality of life better. And that's why I'm here. That's the only reason for me to do this is to make New York City a better place, right? So when you have a leader at the top who's elected and willing to utilize political capital in order to accomplish a larger goal, those are the true leaders. And I met 50 to 100 mayors in the last 20 years, either taught them, worked with them, been one, right? And when you meet somebody who says, hey, I've got an approval rating of 75%, you want to say to them, why would you want an approval rating of 75%, right? It means you're not doing your job well enough. Your approval rating should be 55% or 53% or, and you should be using your political capital in order to accomplish big things. It's not like it's a you know, a bank account that you get to take with you, it turns to zero the day you walk out. So it's people who are willing to make those kind of investments that are so exciting.
How is New York City reforming the way it does business? We will ask Stephen Goldsmith, New York City Deputy Mayor for Operations, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.